Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for the invite and the coveted last spot in the session. Yeah, that's right. I'll try not to get into cocktail hour. Mine is actually a little bit longer than I anticipated, but most of it's pictures. I have several co-authors, one of which is here, Heidi Howard, and also John Zufelt. He's from our Alaska office. You'll see why in a little bit. And Tim Hayden, he's from EL? Searle. He's from Searle. Outline of the talk, I'll be talking on, this is actually, let me go back to the title just a second. Optimizing Military Training Land Use into the Future. This is actually a concept looking for a proponent. So it's a little bit, a bunch of us got together and put together these ideas, and we're looking for funding for it now. So I'll talk about the background about military lands and how what the future might look for that. We'll be using Alaska as a test bed, so I'll be doing a lot of discussion about Alaska. And then some of the concepts we put together. The issue is military training lands must accommodate a wide variety of activities. And fortunately, going last, you've heard a lot about that already. Heidi talked about them and some of the other presenters as well. So they do not only military training, but they harvest grain or timber, they wildlife hunting, camping. There's a lot of activities that goes on aside from military training. These activities have complex interactions that are not actually well understood. And on top of that, in the future, there'll be different activities that we don't know are going to happen yet and don't know how those are going to impact the land. In addition to that, the future also brings a different climate. So we're looking at, we decided some methodology needed to be put together to address this. So our objective was to optimize military lands in light of future uses on the land and an uncertain climate. So our vision was to look at, was essentially like to put together a land assessment toolkit for the future. It would have flexible modules that could incorporate a wide variety of things, as yet unknown land uses, changes in doctrine, changes in the way people train, changes in vehicle fleets, and also adaptable to a different climate. The expected results would be to project training lands into a different climate, tools that using this as a tool that could be used as a decision aid for adjusting how the military trains and uses their lands to optimize that. And then addition to that, a feedback to calibrate the models would include metrics that would lead to early warning if your model predicted that such and such would happen and it didn't happen, that would give you a clue to early warning on changes to the land in the based on climate indicators. So a little bit about the background of the problem. I'll talk about military land sustainability and conservation, some of the future land uses that we anticipate, why climate change is important to that, and why Alaska is so important. Training land management, essentially what the training managers, and we have some of them here, they need to use their land to meet training requirements, to meet the present and future land uses and also preserve or enhance ecosystems that already exist. Some of the current uses, we talked a little bit about some of them, are vehicle training. They also have to manage threatened and endangered plants and animals. Heidi mentioned controlled burns. There's hunting and fishing, particularly in Alaska. Those are really big uses. Harvesting and recreation. But some of the future uses could be new vehicle fleets, new techniques and training tactics that they'd use with those new vehicles or new brigades. And the other thing is energy, and this, I quote the Energy Independence and Security Act. The DOD is supposed to reduce its energy consumption by 30% by 2015, and that's within the infrastructure, and they have over 500,000 buildings. And they also have to reduce fossil fuel consumption by 65% by 2015. That's not that far away. So they're anticipating on military lands also putting up solar grids. I know it'll probably never happen. You're laughing. anyway, if they ever did that, they may want to put up some solar grids, wind farms, geothermal energy, and biofuel production. Let's go to the next one here. There's another really important document that came out this year called the Quadrennial Defense Review, and they do this every 4 years. And that emphasize the importance of climate change to the Department of Defense. It will be reshaping our operating environment, impacting our facilities and our mission. They propose to conduct assessments of the installations to determine how this impact is going to affect missions and how to adapt accordingly. It will stress already stressed systems. Some of the ecosystems are more vulnerable than others. And I mentioned a little bit about the buildings already, but we also have 30 million acres of training lands that the Army manages. And the DOD manages. The Army has about half of those. So, and there's, this is another document that was important that came out this year, is the Strategic Sustainability Performance Plan. And the reason that's important is because it serves, they propose that the Army and DOD serve as a model of sustainability for the nation and sustain into the future without a decline of their mission or environment and maintain readiness in the face of climate change. And they propose to do this in two phases, and one is to develop a decision framework, and the other is to do a climate change assessment. And that's why we kind of cobbled together this decision, this toolkit to be a decision framework. Some of the things installation management would have to look at in terms of climate change would be the biodiversity, wetlands, erosion, forest management, changes in fire patterns, changes in species. And to get why Alaska is so important in this context is because Alaska has large military land holdings. They have, that are also subject to multiple land uses. They're a home of a Stryker Brigade, which uses current techniques for warfare and training. And they're already being impacted by climate change in the state of Alaska. So we propose using Alaska as essentially a virtual testbed for this toolkit. Another little bit about, I spend more time in Alaska maybe than most of you, so a little bit of background to why Alaska is so important. It's our only Arctic state. It's got a lot of coastline. 20% of the U.S. land is Alaska, so that's a huge amount of land. 40% of the U.S. surface waters, 50% of the U.S. wetlands. It's a big contributor. Half of it's underlain by permafrost. I don't know where the mouse is here. There. One of the other things that's really unique, you see all the little dots on there. There's a lot of remote communities which don't have highway access. A lot of native peoples, a lot of different tribes, provides a lot of seafood and oil to the U.S. And Alaska is warming greater and more rapidly than anywhere else. 1 to 5 degree increase in mean temperatures since 1950, 50% increase in growing season length, drying up of the lakes, 24% increase in forest fire severities, increased ground temperature, decreased sea ice. So there's a lot of things going on in Alaska that are leading indicators for the rest of the U.S. A few graphics that illustrate that. These are the changes in the mean annual temperature since 1949. And all of them are positive, and they range from 1 to 5 degrees. And this is a change. It's a 50% increase in the growing season since the early 1900s to current, where it started at just about 80 days, a little over 80 days was the growing season length. Now it's over a little over 120. So that's significant. These are some imagery that show the changes in the Arctic lakes. Not every place is experiencing drying from climate change. Some things are getting wetter, but this is an illustration of what things are drying. And these are lakes in the Arctic between 1950 and 2000, and you can see they're getting smaller. And coastal erosion, because the sea level is going up and there's increased storms, they have a lot of erosion on the coasts. These contours are the sea level, and you can see how it's going up and then where it's projected to further. And there's the bottom figure shows some of the erosion in one of the villages. A lot of the villages are coastal villages since they use that for sustainment harvesting. So some of the observed and anticipated effects on the ecosystem. They expect they're going to be losing as much as 30% or 30 feet of the top of the permafrost layer. The increased warming has already increased beetle infestations in the forests, so the forests are very stressed from the beetles. There's an increase in fire intensity from the already stressed trees, and there's an increase in blowdowns from that. They expect an expansion of the boreal forest into the tundra and a subsequent threat to subsistence living. So how this impacts the military. The warming climate initiates a whole cascade of impacts that affect the soil and thus the physical, hydrological, biological, and the whole system in the far north. So all the talks that we've heard previously about the interaction with the plants and the soil, those are all impacted by the warming. And then here to get to the point of this session, terrain impacts from dynamic vehicle systems. The frozen ground and the rivers serve as critical mobility corridors for training in Alaska. So most of their training is done in the winter, or a large percentage of it. The frost and the snow protects the fragile Arctic tundra and Arctic terrain. Frozen ground that was once capable of supporting this vehicle traffic could thaw more often. So that'll affect the soil strength and rutting and other damage we've seen. This could reduce the window of opportunity for training or modify it so that you need to change your training schedules. Oh, this shows a little bit about the installations in Alaska. They have 1.5 or 1.6 million acres of training lands, 21,000 service members. There's a couple major forts, Richardson and Wainwright, two Air Force, major Air Force bases. And then the Stryker Brigade has 7,600 personnel and 1,600 vehicles. And they do a lot of training there, 132,000 soldier degree days, which is training multiplied by number of soldiers out there training. So the solution, I'll describe our concept for the solution a little bit, the components that make up this toolkit and some of the gaps. Essentially, our toolkit concept would be to develop a climate change range management toolkit. It'd be geospatially based. It'd have different data layers and models that are linked. And our result would be related to land carrying capacity for whatever your use purpose was. It wouldn't just have to be just vehicles. It could be for the other uses as well. And to be used as a decision aid for when and how to train or how to optimize your land use. This is a flowchart of what the toolkit would look like, the type of geospatial data layers we might have, with an input from global climate model that would go through a state of the ground model, which would feed out, an output would be the seasonal ground strength, frost and thaw, depths and timing, snow depths. You could incorporate in with that vehicle models with a mobility model that would give you maneuver sensitivity maps. Merge that with land condition curves or land impact curves, and that would give you land carrying capacity. So a little bit about some of those models that go in there. Global climate model, and I'm not a global climate modeler, so they're complex, and the primary drivers as far as what we'll be looking at for climate change is the temperature and precipitation drivers, and also partnering with the Scenarios Network for Alaska Planning has some standard future climate estimates that they use. The climate then, whatever future climate scenarios you want to play, would go into state-of-the-ground models. And these are models that essentially do a water-energy balance. If this is the ground surface, you have incoming radiation and precipitation and temperature. It has infiltration and conduction of heat into the soils. And it goes through all those algorithms and gives you soil parameters with depth. So a profile, as for our terms, of soil parameters with depth. And it also considers vegetation impact on that, but not the vegetation impacts on strength. So those kind of state-of-the-ground models give you plots that look like this. And this is the surface is up at the top, and depth is on the vertical axis, and this is dates along the bottom. So those you can use to predict how deep the frost goes and at what depth and when it's going to thaw. So if you change your temperature and climate drivers, this will change. And the reason this is important is, for example, if your vehicle needs 12 inches of frost, then you can determine how long you'll have 12 inches of frost. And in this example, it's for about 6 months in Alaska. You also use vehicle models to go into that, and this is an example of one of the vehicle models. It's a NATO reference mobility model, and inputs are the vehicle type and how that's configured, the terrain, driving inputs, and then the weather to give you vehicle performance. Here's some of the type of vehicle data we input into that: tires, engine, dimensions, ride and roughness. And then the type of terrain information that goes into that: soil type and strength and slope and vegetation and roughness. And from that, you also need to consider how much frost you need to support different vehicles. And they also do this not only for ground frost, but for ice. So this is showing the vehicle weight across the bottom and the frost depth for different type of vehicles. That's a Humvee or a Hummer on the left. Striker and a Hemet. So the heavier the vehicle, you need a deeper frost layer in order to support it so it doesn't break through. We can spatially map those kind of things as well, now that we estimate what kind of future vehicles and what the frost will be in the future. And this is a spatial map example for Fort Wainwright in the summer and in the winter. And all the red is areas where it can't go, which are too wet, essentially, in the summer and too weak. And in the winter, when they're frozen, there's huge amounts of area that's opened up for training that the vehicles can use. Once you know where the vehicles can go or not go, and say you can't train in the winter and you need to train in the summer, you need to know what kind of impacts you're going to cause on the terrain. Heidi showed some of these curves as well. This is, and I think Daniel did, cumulative impact width versus turning radius of the vehicle. They also have similar curves for rut depth versus the soil strength, and you can incorporate those into the model as well. And there are different curves for different types of vehicles to get their impact in there. And importing those, you can seasonally map rutting potential. And this is an example of a spatial map of how deep the ruts would be at Fort Wainwright in the summer. And the final part, the final module that you'd want to put in would be land condition curves. If you are going to drive on this and you are going to rut it, how much damage are you going to cause on the land? And this would be severe damage down below and medium damage and not so much here. And those curves would also be based on winter and summer conditions or climate conditions or seasonal conditions. And you could get information like this that tells you how much of your training area is available for you to work to maneuver on. And the important part here is not all the different bars, but these ones that are in the winter are so much more available acreage than the others for the training lands in Alaska. So to summarize, military lands have to accommodate a wide variety of uses, both the current uses and future uses, and all in an uncertain climate. Alaska, because of the reasons I mentioned about being already susceptible to climate change, is proposed as a military land use test bed. We propose a land management toolkit to try and address some of these impacts and put the models together in a way that people could use them for decision aids, determining where and when to train. Looking at future impacts under different climate scenarios and different uses, and adjusting training schedules and rotations. And the final outcome would be to optimize training land use in light of uncertain future and new applications. I think that's it. Yeah. Questions?
Yes. You talked about in your next to the last slide about on the bottom line, decision made to adjust rotation shape. Is there any idea how long it takes the land to in fact recover if you've got some of those deep ruts you showed on that last slide? I mean, does it ever recover?
We've done some work on recovery measurements from rutting in Alaska. The terrain's so different in Alaska when it's subjected to freeze-thaw that it's pretty different than terrain that isn't. And the land does recover. We found that rutting, when we trafficked in the winter, there was virtually nothing that we could see in the summer, some crushed vegetation, but no soil impacts. When we trafficked in the spring or summer, we had pretty big, huge ruts. But with soil freeze and thaw, the soil eventually slumps in, and it does recover. It's not like the pristine land, but it does recover somewhat. The freeze and thaw causes some slumping, and the vegetation, when it grows in the summer, it grows like crazy, so it does fill it in. We have limited data. We showed some recovery of vegetation, yes. So I'm not saying total recovery. It's not like pristine, but it does recover some.
Is it slumping in of the soil around it, so it just fills up the rut, or is there some recovery of the damaged zone below in the basin?
You know, we didn't measure whether the compaction was actually undone. Freeze and thaw does help that because it expands the soil when the water freezes in the soil. So it does help with some of that recovery, but we didn't actually measure that part. We did see a lot of slumping into the sides. These were deep ruts, and it's pretty, gravity just kind of fills them in, especially when it's so wet in the spring. Do you have a question, Tony? You're just waving. Hi.
You're looking out 6 to 8 months or 12 months.
Actually, the premise was to predict it farther into the future. You know, it could be 20 years into the future.
Yes.
Right. If you end up with a thaw, is that what you said? Yes. Right. I don't know if you saw the input to the toolkit, but there's a climate change model. So there's different climate scenarios that you would use to, and those are weather. Essentially, you drive state of the ground models to predict the thaw. So you'd predict. No, well, we're talking about into the future now. So. Factor safety would be large because of uncertainty.
Yes.
But this was really like envisioned as to play what if games with these different climate scenarios that they're coming up with. What if this scenario happens, how would it impact our training? What if that other scenario happens, how does it impact training? Because so that the military can start to be thinking about that and how they would adapt that. You know, and if some of the scenarios say that, you know, you're not going to have many training days, then they'll know they're going to have to budget a lot of money either for repairing the land or to modify what they're doing with the land. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. One more. Go ahead.
Well, again, it's a comment rather than a question. In all of this, you have to remember, as always, that doing nothing is doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can't simply take no action and expect there not to be a change.
Oh. Yes, so if you did no action, there still may be a change.
Right. There will be. It's guaranteed.
Yes. So I think the idea is to be prepared for what might happen.
Yes, yes,
to, you know, even if you go through a mental or modeling exercise to do it.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just cautioning that you need to keep in mind that a no action doesn't mean that things won't change.
Right. Yeah, I can't control the weather now, so not much chance of controlling it 20 years from now.
Well, equal.
Okay. Thank you.